This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Jacob. Thank you for joining me. This is Hunt Detail, and I hope you had a wonderful Father's Day weekend. And as I've mentioned before, we're inching ever closer to the kickoff of the whitetail preseason. A lot of seasons will open in August, but July 4th really kicks off that preseason. Velvet antlers, glassing, field edges. You're probably starting to see deer out on edges and being a lot more public in terms of their appearances, both in the morning and in the evenings. And here in the Midwest, there's an incredible, I guess, amount of cicadas. Sometimes I inadvertently call them locusts, but it's cicadas. And a certain percent, I guess, come out every year, but this year and I guess every 17 years, there's an incredibly high percent that come out of the ground. And I do remember, I think it was back in 2008 or 2007 or something, when I was living in a different city and this phenomenon was going on. And now they're literally everywhere. You hear them. They're loud. They are, they've got the shells everywhere on certain trees. They're flying everywhere. Your windshield is smeared up because there's just so many of them. And what's interesting is that I wonder what the impact is, what the trickle effect is as it relates to the availability of this food source for wildlife, because you've got birds that are consuming them. They're falling into creeks and streams and lakes, and fish are consuming them. And it's just sort of a bolus of all of this new food source for this year. And I sort of Googled it, of course, or Wanted to find out, you know, do deer eat locust? And the answer is that, yeah, they're opportunistic. They're omnivores. They will eat meat. We know them mostly as eating plant, like browse or ag, like corn and soybean, but they do eat meat, and there are those videos out there of them eating like baby ducks or whatever. But so they are omnivores, and they will eat insects. And it made me wonder what antler growth is like in years when there's this bolus effect of cicadas or locust or whatever. And I sort of poked around to try to see if there were any, you know, any correlation in the record books, that sort of thing. But I didn't really get anywhere because 17 years ago, there just wasn't a lot of, I mean, there just isn't as much data on different things as there is now. So 17 years from now, it'll be interesting to see if we look back, or even a few years out, if we look back at the season of 2025, as it relates to species where that interact with in areas with these cicadas, if there was an impact on antler growth. I don't know. It's just what what I think about sometimes. And I'm sure you think about it too, as we, you know, as we approach deer season. And last week we wrapped up a series on out of state hunt masterclass. And I do want to remind you that on Amazon for $1.99, you can download the Kindle version of the Western Elk Hunt Planner. Also, I have a couple partners with the podcast now. It's Relight or Redmond Salt. Relight is the electrolyte version or it's not a version, it's one of their products, and it's really good. They have all sorts of flavors: watermelon, lime, lemon lime, orange, mango, cran apple. They have a chocolate flavored electrolyte now, and I always am consuming Relight electrolyte when I'm out west on my hunting trips, when I'm hunting, and now I just consume it on a daily basis, quite honestly, not in the full dose, but just in little bits, just to flavor the water. And it's really good. It comes from Utah, and they have this seabed in Utah where the stuff is mined. So it's sourced here in the U.S. It's been analyzed. The salt itself has been analyzed, and it's good stuff. And I would encourage you to check it out and use the code DETAIL, save 15% on your order at checkout. That's Redmond Salt. And then Raw Rev is a high protein, low sugar bar that, again, I consume a lot of. And I like the dark chocolate peanut butter. And I think it has like 13 grams of protein, maybe 3 grams of sugar. Most of the bars have about 2 grams of sugar, but for me, I just prefer something that's not going to spike my blood sugar. That's going to give me some protein. It's tasty. And it's something that, I can use as an afternoon snack or when I'm out, scouting or hunting. It's out in my pack, and use the code DETAIL, DETAIL. And you'll save 20% on your first order. So check that out. You know, it's funny. I do listen to a bit of podcast. And every now and then I'll hear people sort of poo-poo gear and gear upgrades. And, you know, gear doesn't help you kill deer and that sort of thing. And it's so interesting because I'm like, really? Like, it really doesn't? I couldn't disagree more, and I understand where they're getting. It's like, yeah, if you have, you know, if you are new to hunting and you want to get into it, and it's this idea that you need to spend a lot of money on Sitka gear to get, you know, to you know, whatever, that's not necessarily true. Obviously you can have, I have a 14 year old compound bow, the Hoyt Vector. I've used that for a long, long time. I've killed a lot of things with it. It shoots great. It has great, if I shared the specs with you now without the name, you would think that it would be a bow from this year in terms of the speed, the cams, the brace height, the length of the bow. I think it's 32 inches cam to cam or whatever. And so it's I agree as it relates to, you know, gear doesn't always translate, but I just, this is the time of year where I'm looking through my gear and making those tweaks and those upgrades on how I can make this more quiet or that more that lighter or that more quiet or something of that nature. And, you know, one of the things is as I climb with my saddle, my sticks and my platform, like how can I arrange that on my waist to make myself more efficient? That's one thing that I'm constantly tweaking, but, and you know, the sticks that I use and even the saddle itself, I think have made just a world of difference over the past few years. And so again, it kind of cracks me up when I hear that, but today we're going to talk a little bit about, some broadhead testing that I did. And you'll find this video on the Hunt Detail YouTube channel. And if you subscribe to that, you may have already watched it. But what I'll tend to do is take a group of broadheads and try to compare them sometimes head to head. And what I've done in the past, and some of these videos have been really popular, is I shoot them through broadheads through ballistic gel and look at the, what I call the wound channel ratio. And that's the penetration. That's looking at the wingspan, I suppose, a blade span of the broadhead, the length of the blades, and sort of multiplying those numbers together to come up with a factor. And so the wound channel ratio is trying to, because not all of these broadheads are designed exactly the same. So you could have, I'll take for example, the Beast broadhead. This is a 2-inch or supposedly a 2-inch cut broadhead, the Sever 2.0, the Rage that has, you know, 2-inch, it's advertised that it has a 2-inch cut, the G5 T2. And when you measure these, they aren't exactly the same from a dimension standpoint. And so when you look at just penetration, you're only looking at one factor. You're not looking at the whole, you're not analyzing the broadheads on a whole. And so I think it was last year, I did a Beast versus the Sever broadhead, and the Beast performed really well and it was just looking at that wound channel ratio. Then I, earlier this year, looked at the Beast, the Rage, the Sever, and the G5 T2, and these all are 125 grain broadheads, and I shot them through a mature whitetail shoulder blade. And so I had, if you've listened to this, I've talked about that. I've done some testing with the Mega Meat. I really like the Mega Meat. All of these videos are on the Hunt Detail YouTube channel, and I encourage you to go there and check it out. But I wanted to take a look at some single bevel broadheads in the most recent sort of test. And I had met the guys from Tulu a couple of years ago at the ATA. And when they were just coming to the marketplace, and really great guys and really nice. And what they have there is a single bevel broadhead that is has a twist built into it. And if you think about a lot of the broadheads that I mentioned earlier, the Beast, the Sever, the Rage, whatever, you know, pick almost any broadhead. A lot of them are double bevel. And a double bevel is where the edge of the blade is sort of in the middle of the blade. Whereas a single bevel, the edge is on the right or the left edge of that blade. And as you think about a double bevel, where the edge is in the middle of the blade, as it cuts through something, that pressure is equal on both sides of the blade as it's cutting. So it's going straight. It's creating a straight plane. Whereas a single bevel, that pressure is not equal, and therefore the blade wants to go into that pressure or away from that pressure. And so it's not a straight plane cut. And when it comes to broadheads, the idea here is that if you have a single bevel, as it hits and enters, it's that pressure on one side of those blades it's actually encouraging that broadhead to twist. And if you think about wound channels, a wound channel that is sort of a corkscrew is more likely to not seal up than a broadhead that creates a flat plane cut. If like you've ever cut your finger with a knife and you see how it opens up, you put a Band-Aid on it, you put some Neosporin on it, whatever, and it heals up pretty quickly. But if you had a jagged or a less uniform cut, it's not going to seal up as easily. And that's sort of the concept or the idea of single bevel. And I really wanted to look at what does that twist look like through ballistic gel? But in addition to that, I wanted to see how it performed going through a mature whitetail shoulder blade. And so I tested the Tulu broadhead. I mentioned them. I think the design is interesting, and they tout that it's going to do 180 twist over 10 to 12 inches. And I wanted to also test that against an Iron Will single bevel broadhead. Now, the Iron Will that I chose had a bleeder blade, but it's 125 grain. And dimensionally, both of these broadheads are mirror images of each other. Not only from a weight, but just from the inch and an eighth cut. And so there was really no wound channel ratio to do here because they weren't dimensionally really any different other than one had a twist and one had a bleeder blade. So what I did, which was a little different than previous tests, is I put the shoulder blade after the first chunk of ballistic gel because I wanted to see the twist before it got to the shoulder blade. Because a lot of times when something hits the shoulder blades, it deflects. It pushes the arrow, especially initially, it pushes the arrow to the right or to the left or in a different way. And that wouldn't allow me to see how these broadheads torque through the ballistic gel. And so I just, from a bow setup, I have a 70 pound draw. It's a 29 inch arrow. It's about a 435 grain inch arrow. And it was about a 17-yard shot. I was really trying to place them almost directly in the same exact spot. And but again, each broadhead had their own target, their own shoulder blade. In fact, each chunk of each setup had two shoulder blades and two chunks of ballistic gel. And I was really impressed. I mean, I was pleased at how I shot, first of all, which was nice. It's nice to hit it where you want it because it's a very small target. It's probably a 5x5 target, and you're trying to put it right in the middle because you really don't want it to poke out of the top of the ballistic gel or to sort of run along the edge of it. You want to see it right in the middle to see what you're supposed to see. And, I'll start with the Iron Will, and first and foremost, both of these arrows penetrated a full 18 inches. So both Tulu and the Iron Will broadhead penetrated 18 inches. So there, again, I was dimensionally they're the same, and from a penetration standpoint, they were the same. And I think I obviously want to be clear that both of these are winners. Both of these broadheads performed admirably. They're both great broadheads. You're going to do well with either of them as long as your shot placement is right. The Iron Will, if you think about the rotation, 180 degrees is basically flipping something. Like if you have your phone or something in front of you, let's just say it's your phone. It's taking the phone and flipping it face down. So that is a 180 degree twist. Obviously a 360 degree twist would be turning your phone from face up all the way around to face up again. So just to give you a frame of reference for what a 180 degree twist is. So the Iron Will twisted 135 degrees. So not nearly a full flip, if you will. The damage to both of them cut through the shoulder blades with very little problem. The Iron Will broadhead looks like brand new, except for there is a little bit of damage to the bleeder blades. The hole on the shoulder blade is significant. It's definitely different than the Tulu. And I would say the bleeder blade is a reason why, because you have another blade sort of cutting out bone. But so from a performance standpoint, the Iron Will did well. 135 degree twist. You can see it. It's very dynamic. And there was a significant hole. I was disappointed the bleeder blade had some damage, but those are relatively easy to replace. With the Tulu broadhead, there was a 180 degree twist. So it was a full flip. And this chunk of bone and ballistic gel for both of them was 19 inches. So both of them got penetrated 18 inches. Neither of them got all the way through the chunks of ballistic gel, they both got through both chunks of ballistic gel, but they did not penetrate the second shoulder blade. But a full 180 degree twist, and the broadhead was unfazed. Absolutely looks brand new. As far as I could tell, was as sharp as it was out of the package. Now, there's no way that it could be going through cardboard and ballistic gel and bone. But I was really impressed. And obviously, if you're looking for a mechanical broadhead, I personally carry both a mechanical and a solid, a fixed blade broadhead. If you're looking for a mechanical, find whatever mechanical that you feel confident with and use it. But I would encourage you to have at least a fixed blade broadhead, at least one, if not two, fixed blade broadheads in your quiver, because there are situations where both are going to be perfect. If you're in an area that is particularly brushy, or maybe you have to shoot through some brush, maybe your target comes through, whether you're in a saddle or on the ground, and there's just a few pieces of brush in the way, a couple leaves, and you're like, I'm going to shoot through those leaves. I feel confident that this is close enough that it's not going to deflect or whatever. That's where I would use a fixed blade broadhead. Or maybe you have a bad shot angle and it's like quartering two and you want to really punch it through. I would use a fixed blade broadhead there. After you shoot and maybe you have a follow-up shot at 40, that's where I would grab my mechanical. And it's a clear opening. Maybe I've hit that shoulder. He's now 40, 50 yards away. I feel confident. I want to get another arrow in him. I'm going to sling, one of the mechanicals that I mentioned before. And again, all of those mechanicals are fantastic heads. I mean, the Mega Meat, the Beast, the Sever, the Rage. And so that's where I would have both in my quiver. And I would encourage you to check out the Tulu and the Iron Will. I paid full price for, or I paid for both of these. I did get, I think I got a discount on both just because they were both on sale. But ultimately, I don't have any affiliation with either of these broadheads, but they both perform really, really well. They're both single bevel, and they both really created a twisted corkscrew wound channel that I think, as I mentioned before, isn't going to seal up quite as easily as something that is just creating a flat plane. So next week, I'm going to talk about some other gear and that I looked at. And I'll continue to do some of these gear updates throughout the summer, because this is where we really tweak it. And there's a few different events, expos, road shows, those sorts of things going on. And it's always fun to, I'm going to try to get to one of them at least and talk about some of the gear that I find at those events. But, you'll see more of these podcasts coming over the next few weeks about new gear, because again, I think the more confident you are in your gear, the more quiet, the more efficient, the faster your setup, the better you can be. And I mean, it really is a game of inches with a lot of these things, where if you do something just a little bit wrong, it could really blow up your hunt. So we'll have some more fun digging, going down this hole. Go to the Hunt Detail YouTube channel, subscribe, and give this podcast a 5 stars on iTunes. Thank you for your support and your time, and we'll talk again next week.
Eczema is unpredictable, but you can flare less with Ebglyss, a once-monthly treatment for moderate to severe eczema. After an initial 4-month or longer dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.